Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It is a Thursday edition of the show as we kind of take you into the weekend on a gloomy, rainy day in St. Louis. It certainly feels like fall. We have Sue Thomas sitting right next to us here. Good
Hi.
Afternoon. How are you? You look very nice today.
Thank you. I took a nap on the couch, and I feel like a person.
It's
like
a new couch, right?
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
Like you took a nap on the couch here in this building?
Oh, good Lord, no.
Well, I had one in my office.
Insane? Oh, yeah, I'm not getting on that
People
thing.
People sleep in that. Every once in a while, I'll come in, and I'm like, somebody napped on that thing.
That's an act of desperation.
It has to be, right.
No, we have a new couch, and I fit on it, like my whole feet,
yeah.
You know, without scrunching up, and I was passed out. I had bulldogs everywhere. I was very happy.
Good for you.
Thank you.
That's not bad to get a power nap when you have to, and Sue splits her schedule, so it's a rough deal. Fred is here, the Hall of Famer. Fred's had quite the day today.
Oh, you guys, right? How's it going over there, Fred?
It's great. Over there, ladies and gentlemen.
I think I got to hit that again.
Here How about old Fred Bottenheimer over there, ladies and gentlemen?
When Sue asked that question, what she means is Camo X on the other side of the building, the station I was on for about 15 or 16 years, 13, 14 of that, doing afternoon drive, and Fred's been there since 1952.
That's what I heard.
That's 1982.
I'm close. But it is the wonder. Today is 11:20, and Camo X is 11:20 on the dial. It's a legendary station. For those of you who didn't grow up here in St. Louis, maybe you grew up in a different market that had a big AM talk station. Chicago had WGN, WBBM, WCCO in Minnesota, WHS in Louisville. These are all WIBC in Indianapolis, all legendary.
That's
what
we call
them heritage talk stations, and Camo X certainly was amongst them. But what made Camo X unique is, Fred, as you know, is the signal that went through a large part of the country, 35 states at one time.
Crazy.
So I've been in Florida dialing in the station. I've been in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, and Camo X came in better than my station, WTMJ, which had to power down because Camo X is on a clear channel, which means there's no other station on that frequency, which, you know, there's plenty of stations around the country at 97.1. And the reason the FCC gets involved is because if you have these, you know, interfering signals when the sun goes down, I can't completely explain the science behind it has something to do with the ionosphere. And I don't even know what that is.
I just know
it has something to do with that. But what would happen is, and you know, there's stories to be told. And since I, you know, spent a fair amount of time on that, one thing that I realized soon, we saw these legendary people that I hadn't seen in a long time. Bill Reeker, who anchored news.
Oh, I love Bill Reeker.
And John Butler, who was the news director. And Paul Grunhauser was one of the engineers. And Joe Geerling was one of the engineers. The thing that brought, and this has changed, sadly, and it'll never be the same, but I think Sue and Fred and I are all in this camp where we had this, what you want to call it, radio geekiness or passion or illness for this business. But it's like a lot of other things that you have a passion for. You do it because you love it. And I've been very lucky to do, you know, what I love on big radio stations for many, many years. But the reach of Camo X and the power of that station is really incredible because you say the call letters, and Fred worked there in a different era. When he's there in the 80s and 90s, I mean, you had presidential candidates that were regularly. I heard one of the stories today of when Al Gore called Bob Hamilton, who was one of my mentors, like on the night of the 2000 election. Yes, please do.
Okay. So it was election night. Al Gore was running against
George W. Bush.
Right. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
And it was, you know, the polls weren't closed yet, and he wanted to get on.
Oh,
and I was such a stickler for we do not interview candidates on
the election
day of an election day.
Well, I get that.
And even if you're a presidential candidate, which was, I guess, silly of me at the time, but I was running the election coverage, so I said, we'll record it and we'll use it after the polls close. Which is what we did.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
I get it.
And yeah. I wasn't leaning one way or the other. It's just I wouldn't let a candidate on because you never know what they're going to say. Yeah. And there's no chance for the other candidate to
respond.
Rebut it.
No, that's a really good point.
I didn't want to get into legal trouble.
And
so
Fred and I have worked together many election nights and many elections, and that is the standard. On the Tuesday of the
election,
we don't really have the candidates on. Right.
Right.
But there, you know, one time Bill Clinton called Charlie Brennan live on the air. John McCain, remember, Fred, John McCain called me, and we did an interview, and I can't remember what part of that went national, but he's talking to me on a, I don't know, it was a Wednesday or Thursday afternoon, and by Friday, it had gone like it was on the Today Show, it was everywhere.
Oh, my gosh.
Something he had said, you know, in the lead up to that election. I can't remember what it was, honestly.
I can't remember either, but I know your picture was showing up on the network TV screen, so like interviewed by Mark Reardon.
Right, right.
Oh, I love that.
That was not a bad experience
at the time. Well, that's really interesting to hear all those stories.
Yeah, and we've got so many people coming in and out of the station right now. And for me, a big bonus is seeing these people, and there's a lot of food. So that's good.
Oh, apparently, I want to go back and listen to this because he doesn't do a lot of media in St. Louis. We'll see him on some of the commercials, but I guess John Goodman spent a fair amount of time
on
today.
20 minutes on the phone talking with Bob Costas.
That's really nice.
So that was great.
That Bob Costas can talk. He is, but I mean, this is a gift this man has.
Don't get me started, Sue.
But I don't mean to bait you.
But we have other hosts, like former hosts have come back. That have been on other stations or back hosting an hour, like
Randy Carricker's in this afternoon.
John Carney
came in with a crazy looking shirt, which I would only expect from
Wendy
John Carney.
Wendy Weiss came back and hosted an hour.
Oh, I love her. I'm sorry, I missed her.
But this is an era of radio where we used to, you know, for Ethan out there and for a lot of the young kids, and my kids will never have this experience. Look, I remember tuning into KMOX on a wintry day if there was even just a skiff of snow, and you hope that your school is going to be listed.
You're praying.
And I'm in Parkway, man. And it's taken forever for Bob Hardy to read those school closings. But you had to. And then when weather was, or any kind of big news happenings, and, you know, our boss right now at all Odyssey stations, Steve Moore, Steve and I were working at KFRU in Columbia. We're trying to rebuild that station, very small talk station. This is in the early 90s. And we wanted to be like KMOX, man. We wanted to do radio like that. That was like our dream. So Tom Langmeier, who was the program director at the time, he became the general manager. He invited us up and we drove in and we sat at one of the producer meetings and he showed us around and introduced us. And Tom became a big mentor to Steve and to me as well. He eventually went on to WGN in Chicago. And when I got blown out at WTMJ, I was a budget cut up there. Before I came back to St. Louis, I went to WGN and I did several weeks there of some swing shift. But, you know, it was just an era where, and Fred, you know this, man, it doesn't happen anymore. We get good big name guests, and mainly because of Fred and his experience.
Yeah. Thank you, Fred.
But as you know, Fred,
Hall of Famer,
those call letters, they meant a lot to a lot of people. And the stories that I like to tell are like Billy Bob Thornton's a great example. He grew up in Arkansas listening to KMOX, and he loved the Cardinals because of that. Scott Jennings and Joe. Joe grew up in Belleville, but Scott in Western Kentucky listened to the Cardinals on KMOX.
And that was a big deal.
Billy Graham listened to
KMOX.
Really? Oh, my gosh.
So I shared this story with Rainford. I know I've told this story on the air before, but this was interesting for me. So I went up, maybe I even shared this one recently, but it's one of my favorite KMOX celebrity stories, and you guys know how I like to drop names. So I went up to Chicago for the junket on Secretariat 15 years ago.
Love anything Secretariat.
Oh, me too. Mm-hmm. So they did this at the Trump Tower up there, and I'm in the lobby, and you do these things in hotel rooms, and they set up the cameras and the chairs and everything. And John Malkovich was in that movie, and Twitter was around at the time, and I had tweeted something that morning, and my handle was at Mark Reardon KMOX, and right now it's at Mark Reardon KFTK, right? I just changed it from that. So I tweeted something at the airport here before I flew into Chicago saying, you know, because I had done a fair amount of celebrity interviews at that time, I'd been working in the business for decades. I said, celebrities don't usually make me nervous, but John Malkovich kind of makes me nervous, right?
I get that.
So I'm in the lobby at Trump Tower, and I notice Mr. Malkovich is outside, and he's smoking a cigarette. He might have been on the phone or something like that. And I do a lot of stupid things, so I thought, I'm going to go up to him. And he comes in the lobby. I said, hey, John. I said, Mark Reardon, Camo X and Camo V in St. Louis, and I showed him my tweet, and I might not even said Camo X, but he saw my handle, right? And it says at Mark Reardon Camo X, and he looks at the tweet, and all he says is, "Oh yeah, I listen to that station all the time."
No
and I'm like,
way.
"Wait, what is wait?" So he goes up. I was confused. He goes up the elevator, and I said, "Well, you know, I'm going to interview. I'll see you in a few minutes." So then I Google it. I'm like, "Oh yeah, I kind of forgot that he grew up in Southern Illinois. I can't remember exactly what the town was." So I'm thinking, you know, because when you do interviews like that, at least one of the things that I always do, I try to find something where there's some common ground,
sure.
maybe to soften the tone, to get an in with the celebrity. You know, Queen Latifah, she loved St. Louis, and she goes, "The Lou," and we sit down when I'm doing an interview. She was awesome. So you have, you know, sometimes you have people that tell stories or they remember something about St. Louis. So I'm thinking, man, he's a weird dude, but I've got an in now. This is going to be fantastic. So I walk in, and you're sitting. I'm about sitting as far away from him as I am from you guys right now. I'm in one chair. He's in the other.
Like
they have
about
camera.
6 feet.
Yeah, they have cameras. You know, they do an A camera, B camera on me, and then a C camera, which is like a two shot or something like that. And then you get the tapes after you do the interviews. So I sit down, and I'm thinking, you know, I'll have a little bit of time here before the interview. And he puts his head essentially down, and he's looking. He's kind of like looking in his lap, right? He's not looking at me, and I'm like, What the hell did I do? And it's so awkward. It's so awkward.
Wait, does he ever look up? I don't get it.
So listen. So he looks up and he goes, "Yeah, I used to listen to all the legends on KMOX." And he starts dropping names like John McCormick.
Oh my
god. The man
gosh.
Who walked and talked at night, right? He mentions John Carney and a couple other names, Jim White. So, and he had said that he had just been back at the time an aunt of his had died and he was back in Southern Illinois. He had known Camo X had lost the Cardinals. He had known that the Camo X was getting back the Cardinals. So it was weird to have this big celebrity that I'd watched in movies for decades to know quite a bit about this radio station.
Very
I would say John Goodman is kind of like the same guy. John Hamm probably had similar experiences as well. But that was very unique for
sure.
Christopher, Illinois. Is where he grew up, a little north of Carbondale.
Right. Well, and you know, you have a lot of people that went to Carbondale. Melissa McCarthy and her husband and Bob Odenkirk will always talk about St. Louis because they were so close and they love the area. But I always thought the Malkovich story was kind
of
interesting.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that really is.
And by the way, he's still really weird, okay? He's a very odd guy. He's one of those guys, I think he lost all his money with Bernie Madoff.
Did he really? Yeah. Oh, that's a shame.
Well, I think he's done okay, and you know.
Yeah, but a lot of them put all their money in.
Oh, I know.
And if
they
haven't been working since, then they're not.
You know what? I read a story today about Kevin Spacey in the LA Times because he's trying to get some work. He's basically saying he's homeless right now because he can't get work. All right, we have Paul Morrow coming up here this afternoon. Bill Eigel is going to be on the show. We have Sue's News on a Thursday and a lot more, including an audio cut of the day.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Former Missouri State Senator Bill Eigel, who's running for St. Charles County Executive, is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. He's trying to pass a county charter amendment that authorizes the county to use excess funds and government efficiency savings to pay off the personal and the real property tax bills of St. Charles County taxpayers. So former Senator Eigel coming up here in just a few minutes. We have Paul Morrow, Fox News contributor. Retired NYPD inspector. He does a great newsletter called theopsdesk.org that you can subscribe to if you go to that website. Hi, Paul. How are you this afternoon?
Very good, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm good. You had a busy day yesterday. Let's start and talk about that. You testified before Congress, didn't you?
I did. Yes, I did. It was an experience, I'll tell you.
Good or bad?
A little bit of both. You know, it's great to see the halls of power, to see where the law is made, you know, to get in there and see where the sausage is made, so to speak. I wish it had been a little bit more of an uplifting or edifying experience, but I can't say it was. I went down there with all kinds of numbers and policy and, I thought, quite bipartisan, things that had worked here in New York under Democratic administrations, where we not only had crime lower, but we had lowered the incarceration rate. And I had hoped, as the old saying goes, we could sit and reason together. After I gave my opening statement, as did the other three witnesses, the first thing that happens is Jimmy Raskin asks his assistant to hold up a giant poster from 30 years ago of Donald Trump standing next to Jeffrey Epstein. And that's kind of how the whole thing, that set the tone, let's just say.
Oh my goodness, I did not know that. So did you ever have a discussion with lawmakers about the issue at hand, which was crime in these big cities?
No, No, we never quite got to that. I mean, with the Republican side, we did. They asked about, you know, what should be done. How could the federal government help? What would be good to go into a crime bill? And that was all very decorous, and I felt very mature. But then the rest of it, Hank Johnson from Georgia acted like he had come to the wrong hearing. He kept saying, isn't this about the military? Why aren't we talking about the military in our cities, which was not the purpose. And by the way, I did deal with the National Guard in our cities in my opening statement, so that was all very performative. And then he kind of just got up and left. So, and then the rest of the time was just beat up. It was all J6 and Donald Trump. That's all they did.
Goodness.
So, no, there's no meetings of the mind there. And I got to be honest with you, one and done. I see what it is down there now, and this is not a place where they're trying to get to, in my mind, you know, real solutions. It's just all we want to hold the midterms.
You know, wouldn't it be nice to actually have some solutions and some things that we can work on? And I think the American people kind of desire that. I know we do here in St. Louis with our own crime problems, and it's just frustrating that you can't get to the actual point at hand during a congressional hearing. But I think both sides tend to make political hay. What is your sense right now of how this transition is going to go in New York City with Mamdani, particularly on the law enforcement side? Because, of course, here we hear stories of people that are ready to flee, take jobs elsewhere. There's a lot of offers out there, Paul, from other departments. I think you've even talked about that. So, and then the president's going to sit down with Mamdani? That's interesting as well, isn't it?
Well, you got to remember something. Donald Trump has an enormous footprint here in New York in the real estate world. His son still runs that real estate empire for him, Eric. And so he's got a lot invested here, a lot riding on New York City's success. And if it really craters, which could happen, as has happened in the 70s when it essentially went into receivership, Donald Trump stands to lose a heck of a lot of money. So I think he does have a vested interest. And I'd also like to think he has New York's interests at heart. He's from here. He was born in Queens. And so, you know, I think that there is maybe a mixed bag there, but either way, I'm happy he's paying attention because people make this point. I think it's true. Donald Trump does not do any of this. You know, his whole administration arguably may be polling better if he wasn't trying to do things relative to cities that don't want him to help. But he does not want to forsake these cities who have citizens who want that help. And so you see it in Chicago, Portland, and I think you're going to see it in New York. I do think that from what I hear, they're going to start doing some operations here relative to ICE. And so I think he is willing. He's meeting tomorrow, as I understand it, with Mamdani. And from Mamdani's side, he needs the money. He needs the federal money. He's made a lot of big promises, and Donald Trump shuts that spigot off. And he's starting out with one hand tied behind his back.
Paul Morrow is back with us this afternoon. So let me ask about the Thomas Crick situation. You and I have talked about this before, kind of wondered why more information on this kid isn't out there. Now we're learning from some reporting with Miranda Devine at the New York Post and a source that she had that there was a much bigger digital footprint in theory than we ever thought about this kid. What do you make about some of this information, which I still think is kind of being undercovered?
First of all, I agree with you. It is being undercovered. Secondly, I have to endorse Miranda's reporting. Miranda is a real experienced journalist, and she digs stuff out, man. Give her her due. She's at the New York Post, and she's a must-read. So I give it all the credence in the world, and it's troubling. I never thought that he was somehow or other working for a foreign power. I know that meme had started early on after the shooting. You know, there was all this speculation about him having encrypted apps on his phone, and, you know, is he being weaponized by the Iranians or something, you know, and I never bought into that, nor do I, not even remotely. I have to really see some compelling evidence. But I think what's more troubling and what's emerged now is that the Bureau took a very much of a nothing to see here move on. And then it turns out that there was more to see relative to his digital footprint, which they told us was essentially nothing, that there was, in fact, a period where he switched from being pro-Trump to anti-Trump. Something seems to have set that off. That didn't happen on its own. And then this stuff about him using the they pronoun and other atmospherics that you could, let's be frank, you could see the Biden administration covering up, because that was their MO relative to this stuff. That was the DEI years. And it is unfortunate, and it just is. This is, as I said at the time, this is where the conspiracy theories start.
That's right.
They grow in the dark. Just tell us what happened, unless it's really relative to an operation. Tell us what happened. And I have to say, I would like to have seen the current FBI tell us all of this. And that's why all of a sudden now there's all these conspiracy theories about that. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, because then that leads to more distrust. And you wonder if you're hearing the truth ever. Then there's the Epstein files. And, you know, that creates a whole nother, you know, can of worms there with people whose names. And, you know, there's Clay Higgins in Louisiana voted against it because, look, he said releasing names like this, you're going to have people dragged through the mud that don't deserve it. They're just connected with this story. And that may be the case. But obviously, there were enough people in Congress, and the president said, look, release these files. You think anything in those files are actually going to lead to further prosecutions, or is this all about politics?
No, I think that there's a chance that we are going to see, if not prosecutions, some real embarrassment. You know, I don't think I'd go that far to say prosecutions, but like we already know, for instance, that Hakeem Jeffries was soliciting donations from Epstein before the whole second case broke, but after the first case. So you got a guy who's essentially a convicted pedophile, and, you know, Jeffries is soliciting money from him. You have the fact that he throws money all over the place. He had, looks to me, a very, let's say, suspicious relationship with the person who, the delegate from the Virgin Islands, who was taking dictation from him essentially in the hearings there. So I think there's embarrassment coming. I would doubt prosecutions. I'd be surprised if they skated on that. But I do think that you're going to see some embarrassed people.
Well, Paul, what's your thoughts on the military action with the drug boats in Venezuela?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, look, this is going to come to a head at some point. Right now, Donald Trump has purchased on that because of the imminence issue. And what it really comes down to is the president's power under Article 2 of the Constitution, his power to protect the homeland from an imminent threat. And the example would be, let's say there were, I don't know, Russian bombers on the way to bomb L.A. or something. You know, well, he has the power to go, say, intercept them without having to go through Congress, because the framers recognized that sometimes the president's going to have to act quickly. But at some point, I think you're going to start to see some pushback. We already got it in some quarters, even on the right. I know Rand Paul's been out there on this, where they want an AUMF, or at least something like it, like we had after 9/11, an authorization of military force, to say, just like after 9/11, we said you can use it. It wasn't a war. We didn't declare war because you couldn't declare war on an ideology. You know, Al-Qaeda was scattered. But that said, they did put in this legislative cover. I could see that happening, because if we indefinitely are blowing these Coke boats out of the water and they keep coming, I think what's going to happen eventually is we're going to hit the wrong one, or there's going to be some story that catches fire in the media that maybe somebody on the boat was 11 years old and had nothing to do with the drug trade, whatever. It's risky is my point. Now, I want to be clear. I support it. This fentanyl is not people overdosing. It's poison. They're putting it in other drugs. People don't realize they're taking it, and then they're dropping to the tune of 75,000 Americans a year. So I have no sympathy for these people bringing this stuff in, or the Chinese who make it. I just wish Congress, as ever, could just get out of their own way, put a legislative cover in. For all that talk, they'll complain, but I don't see anybody sponsoring any resolutions. And so I think it's dysfunction. At least Donald Trump is doing something about it.
Did you see, and I featured some of this audio, that storage facility that got cracked open with the guy finding all the fentanyl in the storage locker out in Colorado?
I did not see that story.
It's a crazy story. So this guy, I can't remember the details. You know, sometimes these storage lockers, they go dead. People don't pay the bill. So he pays $200.
Yeah, sure.
He cracks the locker on it, and there's an amazing amount of fentanyl and meth. He calls the cops right away, and they secured it all. But it was stunning, the amount of drugs that were in that storage locker. I will tell you that. Yeah. Paul Morrow, always great to have you on. Check out theopstest.org. You have a great Thanksgiving, okay?
You too, Mark. Right. Thank you.
Yep, take care.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Total, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.
Well, our friend Charles Lipson, Professor Emeritus at the University of Chicago, is going to join us after Sue's News. We will have a Thursday edition of Sue's News coming up in the next hour. Dwayne Patterson from hotair.com at 5 o'clock. And then, you know, Elliot Davis is out there. He's retired from Fox. He was a great investigative reporter. He's doing independent journalism. He's got thousands of followers on Facebook, and he has been covering the Sheriff Alfred Montgomery trial. And looking at some of the tornado recovery efforts as well, I saw the mayor today. The mayor was in because of the KMOX 100th birthday celebration, got a chance to talk with her. We haven't had her on the air since she won the election. She's been a little busy, but she did say she'd come back on to talk about some of these things very, very soon. I do think, although Ethan has not reminded me, I think I have tickets to give away for Guns N' Roses and for Foreigner and Lynyrd Skynyrd. Now, on the Guns N' Roses front, we're doing a live broadcast Monday at Helen Fitzgerald's. They're going to do the weigh-in for Guns N' Roses that afternoon. It's going to be a lot of fun. The whole team will be out there, except for Fred. Fred's on vacation next week, so he's not going to be here. But we're very much looking forward to that. And then I will be off the rest of Thanksgiving week. I have my grandson coming in from Houston with my son and his girlfriend, so I'm looking forward to that. Bill Igel is back with us this afternoon, former Missouri State Senator. He is running for St. Charles County Executive. He just announced something that relates to personal property tax and real estate taxes in St. Charles County. Former Senator Bill Igel, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good, Mark. Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
Well, let's talk about, first and foremost, I want to kind of get into a broader conversation about the race for St. Charles County Executive. But on the charter amendment that you're trying to eliminate personal property tax and cut real estate taxes, I think most people listening right now would wholeheartedly approve that. And you and I have talked about the personal property tax situation for years, and I wish we can get rid of it. The problem is, and this is where I want your explanation, is when you get rid of that, that's money that's going to local school districts and things along those lines. So what's the reality and the logistics of getting something like this actually across the finish line?
So, yeah, absolutely. And you're right, it does. We've been talking about this, I think, for almost a decade, Mark.
Yep,
and
easily.
It's a huge issue now, property taxes, personal property taxes, and bringing down the tax burden. Here's how I'm proposing we go about it. It's a three-step process. The first step is changing the charter in St. Charles County to allow the county to send surpluses or efficiencies in the county government directly to the county collector, who can then use those surpluses and those dollars to pay down the personal property tax bills and real estate tax bills of the citizens that live in St. Charles County. So, to your point, for the fire districts, for the schools, for the libraries that are getting money right now from personal property tax, instead of getting those revenues from the from the taxpayer, they're going to be getting them from the county, who has its own separate budget. And by the way, the county budget has now gotten so big, more than $600 million a year in St. Charles County, that it represents several orders of magnitude greater than what we're collecting countywide in personal property tax. So the initiative petition that I'm asking people to go to the website that we just unveiled today, axthetaxstc.com, and sign up for that petition so that we can get this on the ballot and grant the county executive the authority to move those extra dollars over and start paying down some property tax bills.
Is that something that a lot of times when we talk about these things, you know, even at the state level with getting rid of the income tax, which I know you supported in the past, or when we talk about the earnings tax here in the city of St. Louis, it's phased out over a period of sometimes a decade. But you're not mm-hmm. talking about anything phasing out here. You're just talking about switching where the pot of money comes from.
Right. So right now, St. Charles County collects a total of about $110 million in personal property tax revenues that goes to all of our fire districts, all of our schools, all of our library boards. And as I mentioned, the county budget, which is separate from all that, is about $600 million plus right now. So what I'm proposing is, one, we've also got some surpluses in some of the new revenues that the county has passed just in the last few years. An example of that is the cent-and-a-half use tax that the county passed to start taxing online purchases. So we're getting so much money from that that we've got a surplus just in those revenues of about $35 million annually every year. And by the time the next county executive takes over, that could be north of $50 million. So you have almost half the revenues in a surplus that we would need to get rid of the personal property tax. The rest of it, I'm going to go and implement a DOGE program in St. Charles County, just like Donald Trump is doing up in Washington, D.C. And I'm willing to bet we can find 10 to 15% savings in the county budget. And between that and the surpluses we already have, we're going to get rid of personal property tax in St. Charles County.
Bill Eichel is back with us this afternoon. So in the statement about this, you said St. Charles County needs bold, conservative leadership to prevent the economic stagnation that has become standard with Steve Elman in recent years. Property taxes have never been higher in St. Charles County under, you're calling him sleepy Steve Elman. It's time for real reforms. But look, I was out in O'Fallon yesterday, and my friend Tim McGowan and his brothers are putting up a new Rosalita's out there, which is going to be fantastic. We have, as you know, Bill, a ton of listeners in that area. That's the area that has grown in the St. Louis area. So how can you call that economic stagnation? I'm kind of confused by that.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. In fact, if stagnation is something that kind of creeps in slowly, and we've been seeing more and more of it in recent years, I'll give you an example. When Steve Elman came into office back in 2007, St. Charles County, as a percentage of its population, was the fourth fastest growing county anywhere in the state of Missouri, fourth out of 116 counties. But that's been slowing down in recent years. In fact, right now in 2025, St. Charles County has dropped to 17th amongst 116 counties. So we're starting to lose it around the edges. And the reason we're doing that is, one, because our property taxes are so out of control that folks are now starting to look at other places besides St. Charles County. And two, we've brought in so many of these apartment complexes everywhere that, quite frankly, we're starting to look like St. Louis County and St. Louis City, and it's causing some stagnation. It's causing some slowdown. In the meantime, we need leadership from Steve Elman, from our county council, we haven't gotten it. They haven't done anything to address these things. And if we keep going down the road that we're going down, then I think we're going to start stagnating even more, just like the St. Louis County, just like St. Louis City. So
okay.
I'm proposing that we go in there and we start to do new things like getting rid of property taxes, eliminating the tax burden, and that's going to get us growing again.
And that's very understandable. And look, I'm a low taxes guy, but on the growth out there, and I've had people that have brought this up to me, and I think this is something that you're talking about, is maybe blaming Steve Elman and his administration for ruining part of rural St. Charles County. Now, you talk about the apartments. What Steve told me, he was on a few weeks ago, is, look, these are decisions, like when you have an apartment that's going up in O'Fallon or St. Charles City, the local communities are making the rulings. Now, maybe there's some support from the county, but aren't the local municipalities the ones that are doing the majority of these developments?
Well, sure they are, but where has the county been when it's time to say, hey, that's too many apartments for the county as a whole, because the cities don't look beyond their whole borders. They don't see the big picture that the county sees. Where has been the leadership from the county to say, okay, we've got enough apartments in St. Charles County, we're not going to do anymore? I'm proposing a countywide moratorium on any new apartment complexes, and if look at the recent history, because Steve Elman hasn't been addressing this issue. From 2010 to 2020, we approved 5,000 new units in St. Charles County. That represents almost 40% of the growth in our county has been coming from apartment complexes. From 2020 to 2025, we approved another 4,000 units.
Okay, but why is that necessarily? Why is it necessarily a bad thing? Because, look, even near my house in St. Louis County, there's just not enough homes. And I see, like, McBride's putting up neighborhoods everywhere, but there's also a fair amount of apartments because people want to be in the Rockwood School District, and there's demand for this housing.
Here's why it's a bad deal for the people of St. Charles to have that many apartment complexes. Every single apartment unit that goes into St. Charles County brings in an average of $1,700 in overall tax revenue for the schools, for the fire departments, et cetera. But even one child in that apartment costs our school district $17,000. So that means that the people that are making up the difference are the people that have been here a long time, that are living in single family homes, that are now having to make up the difference from the preponderance of apartment complexes going up. So it's a fiscal loser. Two, the idea behind St. Charles County is that we're not all crammed into one another next to each other so that we look like St. Louis City. People are coming to St. Charles County because we have more space, because we've been more deliberate in our growth process, and because we're not shifting the burden from these high-density urban complexes to the single-family homes that have represented St. Charles County for more than a generation. So it's a fiscal loser. It's a demographic loser. And while the cities have, yeah, I agree with you, the cities have been absolutely out of control in this, where is the highest elected official in the county doing anything about it? That's Steve Ellman. He's not done a darn thing. He's losing the conquest, the war of ideas with me right now because he doesn't have any ideas. And to your point, his only answer to this question when it's a problem is, well, there's nothing the county can do. That's a city problem.
Well, but Bill, you're also talking about...
I don't think people are looking for people to say, well, that's somebody else's problem. There's nothing we can do.
But you're also criticizing the county for having stagnation in growth. And how do you get... There's just no realistic way to put as many houses in there to have the growth that you desire. Is there? I understand the issue. Look, there's an apartment complex that goes in not too far from me. Our neighborhoods are a little concerned about that. So that's a natural for homeowners and for you to have some concern about. But it's not like there's the ability to put up houses and that people have the ability to afford those houses, which is part of the reasons you have. And in fairness, I've seen some of these apartment complexes. They're pretty nice. It's not like they're run down. You go to Cottleville, you see a lot of that development out there, and it looks nice aesthetically. It's not like they're junky apartment complexes.
Well, so you're, what you're pointing to right now, Mark, is affordability issues out in St. Charles County, right? You're basically saying, hey, it's more and more difficult for people to own a home out in St. Charles County, so why don't we build a bunch of apartment complexes to help alleviate that burden? But here's the thing. I am actually going around trying to make housing more affordable in St. Charles County by bringing down property taxes, not just personal property taxes, but regular property taxes as well. Instead of trying to change the demographics of what our communities look like, let's just start pushing back on all this government that has cost so much money. Everybody in St. Charles County has seen an average increase in their property tax bills of more than 20%
right, but,
over the past five
but
years.
That that's happens ridiculous. In growth. I mean, look, I think that's the same that we'd have in parts of even some northern Jeffco or St. Louis County, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you're right. In fact, that's the same problem we had down there in Jefferson City. When I talk about new, bold, conservative leadership, I'm actually talking about going in there, reforming, and challenging the status quo notion that the only future that we can actually get to is one in which government just continues to grow like the Blob. You remember that old movie, The Blob? Remember that
I
old
do.
Horror movie,
of course,
The Blob?
Yes.
That is what government is like at all levels, local, state, federal. At some point, we're going to need people that are going to say something more than, well, there's nothing we can do. That's the city's problems. You know, we don't levy as much personal property tax as other people, and they're going to have to take care of it. That's Steve's message. That's yesterday talking. That's history talking. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to cut the tax burden, and I'm going to cut the government up at the county level, and we're going to translate that into St. Charles
sure.
County being the first county out of 116 counties to get rid of personal property tax.
And I wish you luck, and I'd be jealous as someone who lives in St. Louis County if you can do that, but you can't.
You're going to want to move to St. Charles.
well, it depends on where my radio station moves eventually when they get out of downtown, but I mean, you can't
wave a
magic wand to do that. This is, I mean, the reality of what you're trying to propose, and even some of the things that you proposed in Jeff City, look, I support the concept, but I tend to be a little bit more of a realist in how you can implicate something like this and actually get it across the finish line.
Let's talk about some of the things that Steve Ellman is wasting money on right now. I mentioned he had a $600 million budget. You know, when I go through his capital improvements budget, do we need a $2 million dog park out in New Melle? Do we need $4 million for desk chairs so that we can buy every employee of the county a new desk chair every 4 months down in St. Charles County? Do we need, what about the family arena? The family arena is losing millions of dollars in operating losses every single year. We spent $30 million in upgrades on that building, and it's still obsolete.
Well, I can't disagree with you on that one. Yeah, I'd like to know a little bit more about the family arena because that's an issue.
So my contention is it's not a magic wand. It's actually pretty simple. The problem is we've had guys in there that have been there for a long time. Steve Ellman's been in there since he was in diapers 20, 30 years ago. So we've got to have some new ideas and new thought processes going on, and we're going to take down this tax burden.
You keep us posted. All right? All right, we'll see you, Bill. Thank you. Former Senator Bill Weigel, one thing you always know is he's always fired up. Well, we will close out the week and have our final. I might be lying about this. So let me check the calendar. Sometimes I don't really keep good track of what the calendar says. I'm going to say the final roundtable of November. Yeah, that would be somewhat accurate. In fact, I think 100% accurate, because we will not have a roundtable next Friday. Friday, the show will be off. We'll have a best of. So tomorrow, we'll have a roundtable. Sue and Fred and I all kind of agree. We're really thrown off this week by the days. We feel very strongly like today should be Friday. Unfortunately, it is not. The aforementioned magic wand cannot be implemented here, but we'll have a Reardon roundtable tomorrow. Jane will be here on the panel, State Rep Steve Butts, and James Knowles, the former mayor of Ferguson. My friend Chris Smith, and his story really is incredible. We've talked about it for several years. About a year ago, he was featured in an episode of 48 Hours called My Fatal First Date, and he has a book called My Fatal First Date, A True Life Story of Survival, Tragedy, Inspiration, Triumph, and Faith. He's going to be featured on Fox and Friends tomorrow morning in an interview with Dr. Mark Siegel, because the Chris's story is multifaceted. One is he was nearly murdered, left for dead in his home with the woman who he was with on a date the night before that he had just met, dead, lying next to him. Then he's in the hospital for a couple of months. He has strokes. He's a long, long road to recovery. But they told him, a lot of the medical folks said that, and told his mom, he wouldn't even get this far, that he'd never be able to walk again. He has fought against the odds, not unlike John O'Leary, who just had a movie made about himself, Soul on Fire. But Chris's story really is kind of incredible, and he's starting to pick up some momentum with national media and some TV projects, etc. So he'll join us just a little bit after 4 for a preview of that. My friend Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago at 4:30. Dwayne Patterson from HotAir.com in the 5 o'clock hour. And then we have Elliot Davis, former Fox 2 reporter, who's going to join us to talk a little bit about the Sheriff Alfred Montgomery trial and some of the other things that are happening in the city of St. Louis. I think that's what I wanted to cover here this afternoon. Then I have some audio that I haven't shared as well. Hey, and then I'm going to do this after the top of the hour. Sue, did you? Sometimes I get confused. It was the CMAs last night, right? Not the ACMs?
Yes.
Okay, CMAs. So I want to make this point. We're going to have Chris on. Hopefully I'll be able to do it. I'll do it at some point this afternoon, because I go through these periods with country music. And if you go back to the early, certainly the 80s and the early 90s, man, I hated country music. At least I thought I did, right?
Right.
And I would take a stand. I'm a rock and roll guy. Well, and you'll probably be a little disappointed in this, but honestly, it was Shania Twain that started bringing me along. Well, she was so freaking hot. See,
yeah,
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm a man. I'm a young man.
You mean talented.
She is talented, though. I mean, look, what Mutt Lange, who was the producer of Def Leppard as well, ex-husband of Shania, what he did with the songs, really incredible. I mean, she had hit after hit after hit, but it really did bring me over to listen. I never listened to country radio, right?
Because she was hot, that made you listen?
Yeah.
I find that interesting.
Well, I like the songs too. No, but of course, her looks had probably something to do with it, if I'm being honest, but I did like the songs. So I started listening and dabbling with country. And I do that, and I have for decades. There are periods where, and this usually happens in the summer, because country music releases a lot of stuff in the spring, their summer, you know, beer drinking out in the sun, light type of music. Sue used to work in country radio, and Sue's definition of country music and what country music is today is very different. But the reason I bring it up is because you might be encouraged by some of the stuff I'm going to play for you that was awarded last night, because this has been a 2-year period. I do this, it's weird, where I have not listened to a lot of country music. So I'm not as familiar, unless it's like, you know,
with who's out there,
or one of the songs that crosses over,
right,
you know, to pop radio. But I want to play you a couple of things that you might actually be intrigued by. And then they also had a, I think they had a tribute to someone that we really both love, and that's Vince Gill last night.
Oh, I love Vince Gill.
We'll feature a little of that. And of course, tomorrow, kind of going back to the entertainment topic, Paul Hall will be here, and then Frank Cusimano. I am so freaking wrapped up in the American Revolution right now.
I love that you are.
I'm halfway through episode 3. I think episode 4 was on last night, so Fred's probably ahead of me, but I can't turn it off. And it really does present some different types of storytelling and some nuggets. I'm not very good. I can't remember what happened 2 hours ago, let alone, you know, 40 years ago when I was in school. But just so many interesting parts of history and how these rebels and the people that created our country and the forefathers managed to do things just even logistically. I was telling you this story in the episode I was watching this morning. Washington at one point is trying to protect, I think, the port of New York. I could be wrong about some of this. And they don't have enough cannons. The British ships are starting to come in. They don't have cannons. So they have to go 800 miles away and drag these, like, 60-ton cannons back 800 miles. How do you do that? There was no MapQuest, or there was no Apple Maps or GPS. Nothing like that. They couldn't text message, right? The British are coming.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.